It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I'm struggling right now. I'm struggling from mosquito bites.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Are you a financial advisor considering the Independent Registered Investment Advisor or RIA model and wondering where to start? Start with Schwab Advisor Services. Schwab has helped thousands evaluate the full range of options and can help you determine your best path forward. Navigate the big and small decisions by tapping into Schwab's decades worth of insights on what fuels RIA success. With Schwab Advisor Services, you have a custodian that will support you every step of the way. Start your journey today at advisorservices.schwab.com/paths.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, checking out the episode. I do hope you hit the subscribe button so you can keep up with the full series. You get three new interviews sent your way every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to keep you up to date on your favorite artists and discover those new ones at Spotify and Apple Podcast, at NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Some of my recent guests have included Liz Phair, Sarah Silverman, Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses, Felicia Day, Susan Tedeschi, Josh Radner of the actor behind Fleischman Is in Trouble and How I Met Your Mother. We talk about his new album. Kristen Hirsch of Throwing Muses, Lainey, The Breeders, Corey Taylor, Michael C. Hall from Dexter and 6 Feet Under, as well as the filmmakers behind Physical, The Morning Show, Expendables. That's just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith, today talking with the Japanese House about their new record, In the End, It Always Does. Amber Bain's going to dig into the revealing nature of her songs, not just in her lyrics, but how they sort of reveal themselves to even her much later on down the line. How she took inspiration from 101 Dalmatians and Richard Linklater's Boyhood, and how the record came from much of what she was actually reading at the time. Amber's also going to talk about Joni Mitchell's influence on her melodies and guitar tunings, and why she chose to cover ABBA's Super Trooper in a live show. All that and more as we dig into In the End, It Always Does. It's Kyle Meredith with the Japanese House.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Loved what you've done through the whole run, but there does seem to be something a little bit extra special about this record. And I've heard you talk about it quite a lot. And it's interesting to me, I guess, when it's being released, because if I've got this right, like, you started this in 2021, you wrapped it in 2022, and finally here we are in 2023. Is it, do you find now that, you know, having just lived with it for this long, that now that it's out, that you're, that it reveals maybe anything that it hadn't before?
I mean, I often make music like have songs that are from when I was like was a teenager. There's one song on this album that I wrote when I was like 17 or 18, which is You Always Get What You Want. And I think like after a certain, there's like an initial period when you're writing that you feel so connected to something, and then afterwards it feels like almost like you're like hearing it as a new listener rather than like the person who wrote it. So I have that a lot with this record. And yeah, like there's certain songs on the record I still can't really listen to without, unless I'm like fully accepting that I'm gonna feel sad. For example, One More Sorry Too for Joni Jones. Like when I listen to that, it doesn't really even feel like I wrote it because it just feels like, yeah, I feel so far away from that feeling that it almost, yeah, feels like another person wrote it at this point.
It's an interesting relationship. I mean, starting a song and being in one frame of mind, time passing, finishing a song, being in a different frame of mind. Like it's an interesting relationship, I think, to have with any of the songs, because not that I'm saying the first half you wrote then the first, but does it, can you see those moments still in the song? Like, oh, that's who I was then, and that's who I was then.
Yeah, and like I also think that when I'm writing a lot of these songs, I'd heart initially written like the first verse and chorus or whatever at one point, and then I'd come back to the song and finished it when I was at a different point. And that often happens. Like there's, I often feel like there's some sort of like prophetic element to writing, and because I guess you're like pulling from like a really deep part of your consciousness or like deep part of your mental, like your psyche, so like it's kind of revealing, and you'll often be like, oh, why am I saying this random thing? But then months down the line, that random thing ha ends up happening, or like that's actually what you end up believing. So it's quite interesting that, like, for example, Sunshine Baby, I started writing when I was trying to fix my relationship, and then I finished writing it when my relationship was over. And so the first verse is like the verse, sorry, the verses are written when my relationship was over, and that chorus was written when I was trying to grasp onto the last kind of crumbs of it. And it's kind of funny because when I listen to that chorus now, I don't hear it as like necessarily very hopeful. I kind of hear it as a like resignation to a relationship, but it wasn't.
That's interesting, because you have, of course, the relationship songs. You've talked a lot about the inspiration came on this record from your current relationship to your own identity on top of that. And I don't know how much that plays into it, but go into an album with that much to explore, how clear does it start out as that versus maybe, as you're saying, it's something you look back on and go, oh, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I rarely like have it. Yeah, it does. I think you're right. It feels like I come back to something and be like, kind of gain understanding as to what the hell I'm talking about after, much after it's written. It's rare that I'll sit down and be like, I want to write a song about this. Sometimes I do, and like those songs kind of tend to be the more like poppy leaning songs because it's like with an intention behind it, and like I want this song to be like this, but like most of the time I'm just sitting there like feeling like writing about something, and I ha really genuinely have no idea what I'm saying. Usually like I think in my head it's just like complete gibberish. Like all the lyrics of Boyhood were gibberish, like actual gibberish for a long time, and I kind of like was like, I kind of feel like I'm trying to say this when I'm saying blah blah blah, and like it just turned out and to be like something that I was really thinking about a lot about at the time. But yeah, I definitely come back to the meaning afterwards most of the time.
You hear about songwriting as like therapy. It's almost a cliche.
Yeah, no, it is therapeutic, and it's like I mean it can be like kind of damaging as well in terms of like sometimes you don't really want to face those things at that time, and it kind of like I've definitely written songs that have catalyzed like something that wouldn't have happened otherwise, had I not written that song, or had I not thought about it in that moment or time.
And we'll be right back right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with The Japanese House.
Well, you know, some of the songs I did want to hit on here, too, because first off, that opening track, Spot Dog. Mm-hmm. In the opening piano, it's almost like it's almost like it's disjointed a little bit and still pulls itself together. I kept thinking about the more and more I listened to it, I felt like I was walking by a room and just caught a fleeting moment of two people inside making this music, you know. It almost feels like toys in a way, the music to that one, if that makes sense. Where did that come from?
Like toy. Yeah. I mean, the initial piano thing is just something I wrote a few years ago because I was watching 101 Dalmatians, and I really like this theme called, I think it's called A Beautiful Spring Day. And like, I really just love that piece of music, and it's like so nostalgic for me. And it's one of the first like things I became obsessed, 101 Dalmatians was probably one of the first things that I ever became like obsessed with. And I'd watch it on repeat and repeat and repeat, and like to the point where the video like broke because I'd watched it so many times every day. And so that music for me is like so ridiculously nostalgic. So I got re-obsessed with the music and like started listening to it. And I love that kind of piano style. So I tried to like kind of replicate that in an almost like tongue-in-cheek way. Like it's so, it's like me bashing a keyboard basically when I'm playing it. And then it turns into this kind of like, I feel like that song is really a good, like, it's like the palette for the whole album in a way. Like there's a lot of like acoustic, more like intricate piano-y stuff. And there's also like more electronic element. And I feel like, yeah, it has this sort of like everything, that every song probably has some sort of like pull from Spot Dog in a way.
That's that was my first movie I ever saw in a theater, 101 Dalmatians.
Really?
Yeah.
The classic. Which,
not during the initial run, obviously, because what was that? It was the 40s or 50s. But yeah, that was the first thing I ever saw. It set right up front. That's 101 Dalmatians as sort of a little bit of the inspiration for the first song. Love Actually, if I read right, in the closing song, and Boyhood directly in the middle. Is that right?
Love Actually is, no, not true. But I don't know where that got picked up. I think I like the song. The feeling that that song gives me is like, I guess I was trying to capture the same, you know, that song by Joni Mitchell, who obviously that song is inspired by. There's a song called Both Sides Now, which she redid. There's an early version of her playing it on guitar, and then she redid it. And they used it in the soundtrack for Love Actually. And that, you know, that like moment where Emma Thompson is, fine, opens the Joni Mitchell CD and it's like this heart-wrenching moment, like that song. I was once talking in an interview like about how that song perfectly encapsulates that feeling of kind of like, I don't know, just like, I guess poignant, but then and that's kind of the same kind of feeling that I was trying to capture in that song, but it has absolutely nothing to do with Actually Love Actually. I actually think that film is extremely problematic, but then Boyhood, what did you say Boyhood was again?
I am piecing together things I've read, and I might have the wrong context here, but the Richard Linklater movie, you know, I was just actually thinking about how, wondering actually how often movies might lead the way for you. I love when that happens, you know, because we take so much, you know, from everyday life, but when a songwriter says, oh, I took this from the movie, it's, I don't know why, that sort of takes it to a new level, a different plane for me.
It's yeah, definitely get inspired by films for sure. Like, yeah, the Boyhood thing, that it is partially inspired by that. That's definitely what the title was drawn from, because originally I was thinking about, like, obviously that film you get to watch a kid grow up, and he's exactly the same age as me, and like there's some crossover there, and I think it makes me think about like childhood, like all the things that happened in childhood, and like how all these things we see this person experience, like, inevitably will become a part of him in some way, and like he'll spend then his adulthood like trying to figure out why certain things have been caused by certain things. And like I was thinking about that with regards to myself, and then I started thinking about that with regards to gender and stuff. But yeah, I do feel like I am definitely influenced by more than just other music. Like I'm influenced a lot by what I read. Like I was reading a lot of poetry when I was writing this album. Like I was much more inspired by reading than I was listening with this album in a lot of ways, because I feel like there's certain things that like open you up to being creative and like inspire you. And sometimes with music it's hard to only be inspired by music, because then you can't help but want to directly copy it and be like, I want that, so I need to do that. Whereas if you look at other mediums, then it's like, oh, I want that feeling. And then you try to replicate that in a different form of art, and then it doesn't feel like plagiarism. No, it just feels like being inspired.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with The Japanese House.
Yeah, with the music, though, and I did wonder this only because, you know, we've brought up Joni a few times, but the indexical reminder almost feels like a Joni riff. Almost, you know, and maybe that's, is the DNA's there.
Yes, it's her tuning, her, like, go-to tuning. It's like that both sides now kind of original guitar tuning. That's what I used for that song, because I was really playing around with that. And like, yeah, this, I mean, the last few years I've been so inspired by Joni Mitchell. I even named my dog after her, so it's no secret.
Yeah, right. Well, that's why, I mean, like her DNA is in every piece of music that's come after. It's one of those artists, you know, like it's just like inescapable for most anybody, I think. You can find the traces there. But that's that song, and that, like, the way you do those lyrics, by the way, in that track, I leave my things around, look at this clip I found. It's, you know, it's like, I can see that. I can see everything you're saying in one of those moments. Wherein Sad to Breathe, whereas I can't tell if the things I have, I just don't want, or the things I want, I just don't get.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a dramatic little lyric, isn't it?
But that's fun to play around with. That's fun to play around with, just to think about. Yeah. Like that's one of those I'd wonder, like, you know, do you look back on that one and think, has it changed? Where are you? Where are you within that line right now?
I don't relate to that at all right now. I remember relating to that. And I think there's like, that's why I kind of, with that song, it's interesting because I wrote the original part of it and it was kind of like slow and acoustic, like it didn't go double time. And I think the reason we came back to it, and it's like there's some weird kind of joy in that track, even though it's so sad lyrically, I think it's because I don't feel like I can relate to that kind of part of my life at all. Like I can't even imagine being there. But I think it's like, I actually think that lyric's kind of funny. Like, I think there's like a lot of, there are a lot of lyrics on this album that I think are like over the top, supposed to be like dramatic. Because I think when you are feeling like heartbroken or like depressed, like it does feel like that. It does feel like over the top and dramatic, and it feels like your world's about to end. And then there's like a sweetness in coming back to that and being like, ah, it didn't, you know?
Did I see that you covered ABBA's Super Trooper?
I did, yeah. I love that song. Actually, I don't love that song.
How do you feel about that song?
It's like one of my least favorite ABBA songs, but then because I found it kind of annoying, because it's so fast and like, I don't know, like ABBA are like one of my favorite bands. And I'm more of like a slipping through my fingers kind of guy. But that song, I just found it like almost like too happy. But then I started playing it randomly on the piano once and I was like, oh my God, these are the saddest lyrics I've ever heard in my life. Like I'd never really listened to the lyrics before, like what it was all about. And also that it's just such a like lovely chord sequence, and it's just such a well-written song. And I think, I don't know, like, I love it when the core of a song is so clever and like, that you don't really realize it. And then you strip it back and you play it on piano and you're like, oh, this is a ballad. Like, I think all the best songs, if you play it as a ballad and it sounds like that, it will sound amazing. So now I love it as a song, but that sounds really arrogant. Like I love it because of my version of it, but.
No, it's just, it's, you know what it comes down to? It's ABBA. It's just the band that keeps on giving. That's
yeah, true.
I love this album. In the end, it always does. I'm so grateful we got to talk about it. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm really glad you like the album.
And my thanks to the Japanese House. Again, the new album is called In the End, It Always Does. Thanks to you, of course, for checking out the episode. Again, I do hope you hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with the entire series. 3 brand new interviews sent your way every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can subscribe at Spotify, at Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And after that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show, Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. You get the biggest in new music, lots of music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews. One of my recent shows had the music of the Lemonheads, the Police, Jam, The Clash, Fishbone, Anderson East, Tegan and Sarah, Wilco, Oasis, The Smashing Pumpkins, Kate Bush, The Civil Wars, The Avett Brothers, Allison Russell, Dar Williams, The National, Dog Star, Noel Gallagher, The Smile, Des Ray, Kenzie, The Killers, The Bengals, Caribou, Peter Gabriel, Blur, and my interview with Westlife. Just an example of what you get every weeknight at 6 p.m. when you listen at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the old social media spots. The address is always the same. Wherever you're looking, it's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time. Consequence Podcast Network.
And I'm like really allergic to the mosquitoes here. It's like, it's like they're like the size of a fist, my bites. It's crazy.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.